All right, so we will start in 3, 2, 1.
Hi everyone, Joe here. Thanks for taking the time to watch and listen to our show with the great Belinda Smith. Now, normally this would be the great introduction for our guest today, but I totally butchered the intro. And with Belinda being the great professional that she is, she went with it. But I felt that I could do a lot better and do more, and I think that I owe it to her to give her a really, really great intro for being on. So, without further ado, here it is, and thank you for listening. This is Belinda Smith. She has an extraordinary career in the Australian horse racing industry, but let's start from her humble beginnings. We embark on Belinda's journey as a jockey in New South Wales. Over her 13 years of experience race riding, she's achieved a lot of success. 380 career wins, $6.8 million in earnings, multiple country cup championships, and was the leading female rider in country New South Wales.
Charlatan, Great Grats, all on the inside, but it's the wheel out wide in front, and the wheel will beat home Great Grats. Third, maybe.
At the 600, I let her travel up outside him and went for her in straight, and she's just too good.
She was at the top of her game, competing at a high level, which brought to the attention to everyone in New South Wales. Later in her career, she decided to take a break from the industry, becoming a wife with her husband, Drew Smith, and welcoming Gracie Rose into the world. Having contemplating retirement after raising her family, she made a comeback into race riding. All seemed back to normal, but on April 19th, 2023, Belinda suffered a career-threatening injury. Which leads us to where we are now. On July 22nd of 2023, Belinda makes her debut as a form analyst on Sky Racing. Having sent out a couple of emails and having Sky Racing host Gary Cleese mentoring her, Belinda's determination, perseverance, and having a keen eye on horse looks and behaviors, she is now one of the up-and-coming tipsters on Sky Racing.
Fantastic job, Belinda.
The little girl who had her dreams of becoming a jockey and being a prominent figure within the media. Through hard work and not giving up with no stone unturned, Belinda's journey through horse racing is an inspiration to all.
Belinda, thank you so much for being on. I appreciate your time here, and it looks like it's really nice over there.
Yeah, it is. It's very in the middle of our summer here at the moment, so very warm, but beautiful day, and thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I appreciate your time, and you had a very extensive jockey career, as I mentioned in the intro, and it started from your family because your mom was a part of the industry. So tell us a little bit about how you got into horse racing.
Yeah, just grew up around horses. Mum was rode show horses, show jumping, eventing growing up, and she grew up in the racing industry from the time she was around 15, 16, with my father, who was a trainer at different times. And when I was about, I think, 12, she got her trainer's license. So obviously there was no looking back from there. And we moved over from Western Australia, from Perth to New South Wales, and that's where she got her trainer's license. I was always kind of riding show horses, but as soon as I turned 15, I was able to ride track work, and that's where the bug really set in.
And do you have any brothers and sisters also a part of the industry as well?
Not so much part of the industry. I have a younger brother and a younger sister. My sister has a restaurant and a service station on the outside of Grafton, which is like northern New South Wales. And my brother works with my mum in Grafton. So they're kind of about 3 hours north of me, but they're probably horses is what I ended up being.
Yeah, no, it's pretty interesting because usually when you have like, we have a lot of great families a part of horse racing. Especially here in the United States, so we have like the Ortiz brothers and also the Davis brothers and sisters because they both have two sisters and one brother. So usually when they have like somebody in the industry within the family, it's like seems like everybody's in the industry.
They've probably been in patches. Like growing up, I feel like it was kind of a prerequisite growing up. If you were living in mum's house, you had to help out at the stables. So maybe that turned them in the other way. But I obviously jumped right in with both feet, and that they were in it in bits and pieces. And my sister worked as a strapper, so a stable hand for a good amount of time, and has a horse of her own, but just never got really in depth in the actual racing industry.
And you started riding in your apprenticeship, which is basically a rookie jockey, back in 08 and 09. So when you were growing up, was it like pretty cool that you were gonna live the dream job that you had for quite a while?
To be honest, I never probably didn't think that I would ever make a jockey, for the simple fact is I'm quite tall. I'm about 5'7", probably 170 centimetres on the old scale. So I'm quite tall, and I had to do a fair bit of a trimming down to be able to make weight. I was probably around, when I was 16, I was around 62, fits in your scale, but I definitely had about 15 kilos to lose at that age to be able to get to a weight where you could probably entertain the idea of riding. But when I did, I think the seed was planted, and I went from 62 kilos to 47 in about 3 months.
And was it hard at that age to try to keep the weight? Because usually when you're an apprentice, so for people that don't really watch horse racing, when you're an apprentice, you get to take weight off. So it gives them a big advantage for when you
Yeah.
race. So what when growing up, was that kind of hard to do? Did you have to really watch what you had to eat and work out a lot?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Probably done it all the wrong way first. Yeah, I think the initial weight came off pretty easy, but it's keeping it off once you've obviously built up a lot of muscle, and probably doing it the wrong way, not eating enough and sweating, and then obviously once you sweat out a fair bit, it bounces back more so. So I definitely done it the wrong way first. Towards the later stages of my career, I think the weights went up a bit as well. So it did become a lot of days having to walk around that 48 kilo mark and be fit. It was pretty hard.
And the country circuit, because you did get to ride, so the country circuit goes from, it goes, so the tier is the country, provincial, and then metro over in Australia. So you worked your way up from country and being one of the best riders in the country to provincial and metro. What was it like moving up just so fast in your career?
To be honest, it was a really slow burn. I was definitely just an I loved riding, probably for trainers that you knew it meant a lot to them. Winning the races, obviously you see the small guy and you come back after riding a winner for him and you've just made their day. And I did get the odd opportunity at provincials and in town. I'd done a small stint at the Gold Coast at a provincial trainers and rode a few winners, but I was always more at home, and probably more so I just like riding winners, and I probably wasn't getting the caliber of horses at provincial and city meetings.
And when that happened, during your time, it took about 10 years, and then you became one of the leading female jockey riders for the country circuit. So how was it like? How was just being able to be one of the leading people in Australia just for that?
I probably just appreciated just getting the opportunities, riding nice horses for good trainers, and yeah, I really love my job. I feel like when I stepped away to have my daughter, I didn't realize how much I would miss it. So I was keen to get back. I think around 3 months after well, probably 6 months after I had my daughter, I was back riding work, and just to ride work and train the horses was a lot of fun. You definitely, when you've done something for so long, it just feels like home. And when you're pulled away from it, you do feel a bit lost.
And you won a lot of country cups in your career. Are the country cups sort of like a big stakes race for the country, or for is it like for the entire meeting in New South Wales?
Yeah, it's pretty much the pinnacle of the country areas. Like, obviously, the cups are worth more money. a little bit more prestige about them. A lot of these cups have been around for 100, 150 years. So they're always something you'd like to tick off the bucket list. They are getting harder and harder to win in the country area because now a lot of the city trainers, because of the prize money, come down with city class horses and they bring their city jockeys with them. So it makes it a bit harder to the races. But I was lucky to win a number of them throughout my career, especially in the later kind of couple of years.
Now, one of the cool things is one meeting, you had four winners. I think it's hard to just get two or even one, but four in one meeting. What's going through your mind? Like, when you think, oh, okay, I won the first one, the second one, you're like, I think I could win the entire card.
Yeah, I have had a lot of luck at that track, and it was definitely a bucket list kind of tick off to ride the four winners on the one day. I was about probably 2 months pregnant at that stage too. It was a really hot afternoon at Barrabool, so I always had a lot of luck at that track. It was definitely one of those tracks where you needed to use your head, you needed to save ground and not come around horses, and it was probably just a nice payoff. I always knew when I went to that track, I'd always ride at least not one or two, maybe three, but four was a plus.
Yeah, because you see a lot of jockeys just winning, getting a hat trick, which is three races to win, but you got four. So it's like, I are there some jockeys that you could like say, hey, I won four races. I think I won more than you in one card.
Just a feather in the cap. I think it would have been countless of times I've rode three winners and been beaten in a narrow photo for the fourth and run second. So sometimes you think I ride four winners on this day, but the deal's not done until you're past the post, and that was nice to do.
Would you have ever considered riding at Perth since you were born there? So, the races of Ascot and oh, I forget the name of the track that's right across the street from it.
Yeah,
It's a big one too.
Belmont.
Belmont, yeah,
Belmont.
Ascot, Belmont. Like, w would you
Yeah.
have considered going there, going back home?
Yeah. I would have loved to if the opportunity ever arose. I think probably the biggest thing in racing is kind of your connections. I rode a lot of work to get my rides. So obviously for that reason, I earned rides and was rewarded for my hard work. But it's probably hard to get your foot in the door in another state when probably no one really knows who you are because the industry is quite expansive over here, especially in New South Wales. A stack of different tracks, a lot of different participants. So, and it's hard to get your horses worked over here. There's probably a shortage of track riders, so tame rides. So unless you're kind of putting in the hard yards, it kind of makes it hard to get your foot in the door.
Was there ever the opportunity to ride in the US? Because we did have a lot of riders from Australia make their way over to the US and some become successful over there. So has there any has he have you ever thought of like if you what within your career to be riding in other places internationally?
Oh, it would have been an amazing opportunity, never came across, but I think if it would have been offered, I wouldn't have shied away from it. But I was kind of I really enjoyed riding. I enjoyed riding in my area, so I can't be too upset that them opportunities never came. But it would have been a real eye opener, and I have to say, it's always crossed my mind. I'd love to have a holiday over to America, see how you guys do it over there, and it'd be a really amazing experience.
Would you have picked, out of any of the countries around the world, which one would you have, if you had a first choice, we'll go first, second, and third, which three countries would you have considered to be on your radar?
Probably first America, only because I've watched the shows, and the way that you guys do it is so much different to how we do it. I've probably used have like yeah, it's more seasonal from what I've seen over there. Definitely England, really, really good to see, and probably New Zealand too. Obviously, they're not far away. They do a lot probably similar to us, but they're probably more lead to stayers rather than sprint type horses.
So we're going to take a little glimpse of what Belinda had to go through as a jockey when she had to, based out of Port Macquarie in New South Wales, to drive to other different parts of Australia and New South Wales. They're pretty far away from each other. So I don't know how you were able to do that and then come home, have your life, and then go back out there again. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's probably just the normal, the very strange normal. You'd get up if you weren't riding too many hours away. You'd get up, ride work, ride a few horses, work in the morning, and then get in the car and travel to the race meeting and ride and come home. But places like Moree, obviously, you'd have to be on the road before daylight, so that's around 6 hours away, and it would take you, you wouldn't get back till after midnight. So big days on these meetings probably only happen once every 3 months, so it's not too bad.
Were you ever like, oh my God, I gotta wake up this early again?
I remember being very ambitious earlier in my career and going all the way out to Moree for one or two rides that were very steady, but it's always kind of, yeah, get repaid for the effort you put in, so you kind of get back what you put in, and that probably showed in the later part of my career. I think if I didn't go out and make that effort and do the big drives, I probably wouldn't have built the momentum to get better rides.
So I'm just gonna pull up this map real quick so you can see it. It is pretty interesting to see how far they have to drive. So this is the map of New South Wales where Belinda is located. And you're at Port Macquarie, which is at the coast. So we're talking about all these different tracks that you had to go through. So that's like go
Yeah, I'd
this.
probably you'd go to Grafton, Lismore, and Mooloolaba quite regularly up the north coast,
So like
and
right here in
then obviously
Grafton.
out to Inverell and Moree. Yeah, Grafton's up the top at northern New South Wales,
And then you have
and
this one
then
at the
up to
very top.
Mooloolaba right there. Yeah, and
Then
then I'd
Maury.
probably south. I'd ride out towards the Brook.
This one. And then you said down south it was where?
Probably more west, more to Scone, Singleton, Muswellbrook, Scone and Muswellbrook, and I have stepped out right out west to Dubbo on a couple of occasions, and Gunnedah and Armidale.
Wow.
So
And
plenty of driving.
do you have to do that while you're at Sky 2?
Say that again.
Oh, I said do you have to do that while you're on Sky as well? Like working for Sky, do you still have to make those trips?
Now that I'm working for Sky, I do head out to Moree. Obviously, it's not very often. Their tab day meetings are probably only a couple of times a year, but I do head out to Scone, Muswellbrook a fair bit. I've done a fair bit of work at Tamworth, Armidale, and obviously up the coast. Port Macquarie is not far from Foster and Taree. I think I've worked at both of those meetings last week, so plenty of work to be had, a bit of driving, but you get well.
So I'm assuming your car has a lot of miles. Do you still use the same car from when you were a jockey to when you're working at Sky now?
It's funny, I used to tick over around 150,000 Ks a year in my
Whoa.
car, and then I bought a new car when I had Gracie. And in the couple of years I was not working, driving up and down the highway, I think I'd done about 30,000 Ks, and now I'm over 100 working for Sky for the last 6 months. So it definitely rests.
Yeah, that's crazy. I don't know how you're able to do that. And speaking of your jockey career, we're also gonna pull up a race that you are gonna kindly explain to us how you ended up winning the race. So that was pretty cool that you got to do that. And it's always good to pick the brains of jockeys, like what's on their mind of what how they ran a specific race. And this one meant a lot to you here. This is the Armidale Cup. So this is at 1,900 meters. So it's a full circuit around the track. Here it says 3 point. Or 1 mile and 3/16, so that is 1,900 meters. And where were you drawn in this track?
Yeah, I think I was out towards the middle of the line, about 8 or 9. You'll spot me in the striped colours. I think it was a striped red and green once we jump. It was on a little mare for Scott Singleton called Concessions, and it's a very tight turning track, this track. So I was just keen to get to the rail and save as much ground as I could.
When you won, did you want to jump on that monster jump thing that's like that you could see on the screen?
To be honest, I didn't remember it being there on the day, but they definitely they put on a good show for the kids. I do remember riding at different meetings there, and you had the bouncy castles and the horses shying at them. I probably wanted to bounce at the guy that was operating it and tell him to take it away, but no, it was nice to win a country cup meeting, and generally you're just trying to get to the gates in one piece.
Yeah, and then your daughter Gracie Rose is going to be able to get to do that too, and she'll, I'm sure, enjoy herself. So here we go. Let's go at the
Yeah.
jump. There they go.
Yes, yeah, so I'm in the white cap, red colours, white cap, and you see I jump from the gates and I'm quick to tuck across heels and get back as close as to the fence as I could early.
So you're
It's
about.
one of those tracks you'll see, must be here. Three parts back the fence in behind the guy with the red cap, or with the green cap, sorry.
So you're right here. Is that you? My arrow is so bad. I'm so
Yeah,
sorry.
me. Yeah, it looks
Okay. So
that's okay.
you're
But
far.
you'll see
You're.
coming into.
I'm sorry. What were you saying?
You'll see coming into this first turn. You'll see coming into this first turn, the riders that push forward from the wide gates, they really get shot wide and lose a lot of ground around the first corner to get back to the fence and try and pinch runs when they get shot off.
So we'll see that the turn's coming up here. So the winning post is kind of far from where the starting gate was, huh?
Yeah, it's about probably 200 meters, about a furlong. But you can just see by the time I start at this corner, I've gone from a wide gate to mid furlong, and I think that probably for mine was probably the winning move because you put yourself in a position where you haven't got that much ground to make up around a tight turning track.
Yeah, because you can see here when they approach the bend, there's some that get caught wide, so you just let them go ahead of you. So that was a pretty good move on your part. So now they're going to make the bend, and now they're going to be almost approaching the backstretch here.
Yeah, you go up a hill here. So around the first corner, a lot of those horses are using energy, their position, whereas I've just been able to jump, get to the fence, and save my energy coming up this steep rise here because you really don't want to be expelling energy coming into around the 900 meter mark because it's quite a steep incline.
So about here. So about
Yes,
here.
we're about the top of we're at the top of the rise now.
Now, were you thinking like, okay, I hope all these people, or I hope all the jocks in front of me just keep pushing their horses so I could make my move when the turn comes? Like, because I think it's about timing, right?
Yeah, well, a bit of timing, a bit of luck. I'm just hoping that the horse in front of me, which is Dev Land, who is a good old Country Cups horse himself, I think Raymond spoke to him on that occasion. He's a good rider, so I felt as though I was following the right kind of horse. I was hoping that at some stage, at around the 600 meter mark, he'd be looking to press forward and make a move and pop into a three wide line, and I could just keep on saving ground up the inside fence.
So as we're watching here, the lead horse, I think, ends up
Yeah.
eventually running out of energy. And you're, I think, the seven. So you're
Yeah.
about to make your move on the rail here. So were you thinking at this time, were you
Yeah,
like,
so about the
okay,
600. Yeah, I'm thinking right now. This looks all right now. I just need one or two more to peel and then put her in the clear at the top of the straight.
Now, you were saying luck, like, is there a lot of luck in racing as a jockey? Do you think, like, if some made the moves or made the mistakes or whatever, that had to have played a
I
part of
feel
it? Are you?
like, yeah. It's half using your mind around these tracks and it's half luck because obviously I needed luck. They were running along good enough to suggest that they would peel and the horses in front would stop. But to say if the lead only stacked up, the race probably wouldn't have changed complexion. And I would have just been stuck three parts back on the fence with too much work to do. But because they were rolling along good enough, horses were looking to make their move, the race opened up for my horse.
Yeah, as you can see that there's a lot of them coming wide. And I think you mentioned before that that's probably a place where you don't want to be wide. So now we're at the 400 meter and you could feel the horse just going, just wanting more. And for I've interviewed a lot of
Yeah.
jockeys and they said they love that feeling of when they know that they have a lot of horse and eventually ended up winning a race.
Yeah, certainly. To this point, I know I've just saved energy throughout the race where a lot of other horses had worked. So all that needed to happen was Devlin, the horse in front of me, to peel a little wide and then I'd get the gap and be able to give my horse a nice clear run. Because I had plenty of horse underneath me.
Now, right here, where were you determined? Like, do you wanted to stick on the rail or was the outside better ground?
I was probably just it probably was as much as I was just being hyper vigilant where the run was going to come, so I didn't interrupt my horse's run. I could just keep her in a rhythm because obviously over these staying trips, you lose a lot of energy if you have to change course or check them, or so I'm just trying to give her a nice uninterrupted run and keep her in a rhythm because I had plenty of horse underneath me.
Yeah, because you could see the momentum gain after that. See, once
If the
you,
track
yeah.
was in the soft range, yeah, once I got clear, it was all over. And I think she was around a $10
Yeah.
pop on this occasion.
Hi. See you guys. Thanks for having me at the cup.
Perfect.
There
Yeah, that's all.
you go. But yeah, see, like when you get about here, you could just tell that the horse was just gonna have a lot of momentum. But you had to try to make some
Yeah,
space
certainly.
from leaving the rail to go to the outside and end up going over the top of them.
Yeah, I think the track was like a soft five range that day, so probably bias and the best part of the track didn't come into play. But if it was a six or a seven, obviously that's when you're trying to look to get out to the center part of the track. But the track was in tip-top order on that day, so it was just open to nicest run possible.
Do you focus on like when the horse is supposed to change leads too? Because like that's what I look for when I'm looking at when I'm watching racing is sometimes when they get around the turn and you watch them, once you see them like switch their leads and then you're like, oh my God, Wh switching leads is when the horse, the legs go the way that it's supposed to run on the track. I guess they
Yeah,
talk
they
about it
swap
that time.
legs.
Yeah, they swap legs. So do the
Yeah,
horses know?
certainly. Oh, absolutely. Definitely more so around these tight tracks. So when they get unbalanced, it makes it hard for them to just say if she was on the wrong lead coming around the home bend, she wouldn't have made the corner. But if you can get them to change legs coming around that tight track, they're definitely more balanced and can make the corner a lot better too.
Yeah, I think it was. You could kind of see it because when you see their legs switch a different
Yeah, it
direction,
just changes there.
it just changes.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, that was the winning move and a cup win on your part. How did she feel after like the gallop out and when you crossed the wire?
Yeah, no. Honestly, I felt like the further we went, the further she would have won by. He's a very good trainer to ride for. An excellent job with his horses. They're always pretty well spot on. So it was just up to me to give her a nice run, and we're able to conserve energy from a bad gate the first half of the race. So the second half was just about finding a bit of room and keeping up her momentum.
That was a great ride. That was pretty cool. Thank you for taking us through that, because it's always cool to hear what the jockey's perspective, especially, when you're there and you're in the moment, but you don't have time to actually review it. So like revisiting it now, it's like pretty cool to see that where you started, what you had to do, and you only had so much time to think. And then you're like, okay, if all this goes to plan, then it's gonna turn out. And it ended up turning out for a win for you.
Yeah, certainly. I think that's probably definitely I was a better rider in the later stages of my career, probably the last 3 years, because you learn to read races a lot better. I think early days when you're an apprentice, it just all goes by that fast. So the horses kind of take you where you're going. But as you're older, you're able to kind of read the play, know what other jockeys are thinking, and it definitely helps, especially in tight finishes where there's not much between the horses.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool. Like, would you say that was one of your top wins?
Yeah, probably. We're doing up there. I rode a number of cup races, the winners of a lot of cups, and I did it. It was always kind of you drove home with a bit of a grin on your face when you were able to ride a cup winner at a country track. And obviously, she'd done it very well on that occasion. And I was proud of my ride because I felt that as though if I didn't use my head early, it could have been a very bad ride. If I pressed forward, I would have been stuck very deep. Or if I tried to come around them, she may not have had enough horse there to be able to come around, and I would have lost too many lengths. So I really felt as though on that occasion the ride won the race.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I remember watching, might have bet on your last race where you won on a long shot, which was back, I want to say, back in 2022. So you did take time to become a mom, and now when you they let you ride while you were, is there strict like rules when you're pregnant and you have to ride?
You can ride the, obviously it's open to your own interpretation, but the rule kind of states you can ride your first trimester, which is the first 3 months, 12 weeks. So I rode up to that stage. I wasn't feeling too bad. Obviously, weight comes into a factor because you can't shed weight when you're trying to grow a baby. So that probably limited the amount of rides that I had in that time, because it all plays a factor. But I think I rode one day, I rode four winners, I rode a number of other periods.
And you were considering retirement, but then you came back out of retirement, still rode, and then the unfortunate event happened. I believe it was last year when you had an accident before the races were a start. So this was during track work, and they had to airlift you. What was going through your mind when that injury happened?
To start off with, I was thinking to myself, I'm so glad it happened track work and not race day, because I really challenged my now husband at the time. I was keen to come back race riding. He was pretty keen not to have me come back race riding. Obviously, he worries, which is probably fair enough. And I had a daughter at home, and I'd only just kind of talked him into letting me go back race riding. It'd been about 3 months, 3 weeks, sorry. I'd had about 10, 15 race rides, and it was just a trivial fall on a horse that I rode all the time. A bit fresh, I was bowling along, doing a bit of half pace, and she'd done a U-turn, and I just landed wrong. I landed, and as soon as I hit the ground, I knew something was wrong. I lost sensation to one of my legs pretty much completely, and I had pins and needles, a lot of numbness. So I'm lucky I didn't move, because I had a burst fracture to my L1 vertebrae, which done a bit of spinal damage. So I had a fusion, which is I got about probably 8, 10 inches of metal in my back, where it's all fused together. Off due to the injury at the moment, I can't ride at the moment. So that's why I was quick to I kind of go mad sitting at home, and I've always probably dreamt of having a job at Sky, to be honest. I remember when I was probably a 4 kilo kid, I said to Gary Clesi, I said, I'll work with you one day. And he had a bit of a giggle, and he goes, I hope you do. Anyway, when I first had Gracie, I looked for an opportunity. Gary done a lot of training with me via Zoom, We'd sit at home. He'd kind of run me through the process, but at that particular time, trying to get my foot in the door when one of the girls was on maternity leave. But by the time I looked like getting a tick off, the girl was back, so there wasn't really an opportunity at that time. But it's funny, I broke my back. I sent a couple of emails, and within a week, I had a job this time around.
So the presenting part, you've always wanted something that has to do with horses sticking around the industry in your conditions that way you had to go through now.
Yeah, certainly. Obviously, I love the racing industry. I'm 34 now, so obviously well reminded that I can't ride forever. So you kind of, you look towards other ideas that excite you, and I love the job a lot more than I expected to like it. I get a real kick out of not only finding a winner, but tipping a winner, especially one at a bit of a price. And obviously, being a jockey, you're not allowed to bet. So the betting and the punting and all that side of it was very new to me early days. But I've taken to it like a duck to water. And I've obviously done a lot of form, as you can see, better rides from being smart and knowing how a race was going to map. And I always rode every horse like it was an odds on pop. I just treated them all that way. And for that reason, I was able to ride a lot of long shot winners. So probably my mind being that way inclined, I'm probably more forgiving of horses that have a bad run that they can bounce back, because I've seen it time and time again myself. So I think on a number of times that's paid off. And if you forgive a horse for a bad run, you can generally see them bob up and be at their best their next start at a bit of a problem.
Yeah, you just read my mind. I was going to ask you about that. So that's perfect. Wow. But you've sustained so many injuries. So like, you know, being a jockey is hard. Now you're putting yourself in another vulnerable position, becoming a tipster, if you will. And a lot of tipsters, you know, sometimes they get a little flack for not picking the right winner. You're on the punter side now, which is like the betting side. So with that, like, do you think that you have to gain a lot of mental toughness as you were a jockey to becoming a part of the media?
Yeah, certainly. It's been a very steep learning curve. I've pretty much just been thrown in the deep end because I needed to go wherever the work was. So even though Gary trained me, I think I worked my first meeting with him, but I was kind of had to learn on the job, which is probably one of the only jobs where you learn on the job in front of a camera where people can rewind it and replay it. So definitely open to scrutiny, part and parcel. And honestly, I've been called every name under the sun as a jockey, so it just rolls off the back. I think I've been pretty lucky in terms of on the media side. People have been very kind. Obviously, I feel like it's a job where you just continue to learn at, but that's probably what I like the most about it. It's mentally stimulating, and you kind of pick up where things you've missed along the way and things that you need to improve on moving forward all the time.
So with taking your jockey experience to what you're doing in broadcasting now, it seemed pretty natural. So the only thing was having to overcome a lot of different things that you had to do on camera. So what was your first day like? Were you nervous?
Oh, I was packing myself, dead set. I was absolutely wetting myself. I was so stressed. He's amazing, but he's very structured. So I was so scared I was going to miss a step, that I was going to say the wrong thing. Stuff that should be second nature to you when you're kind of on edge, worried about messing up. You forget the nut stuff that's probably you shouldn't forget. But I got through it, and definitely each shift got much easier.
Yeah, I mean, having worked with a lot of the talent on Sky, they do a really good job of presenting and having the info for us and all the winners. So like, you've worked with like Chantel Buckley was there, Melinda Turner, Priscilla Looker, all those guys. Yeah, you guys are doing, Jason Witham is also, he's actually does some stuff for us on Sky, and Bernie, Michael Maxworthy, all those guys too. So like, being amongst that company, yeah, it must be like a very humbling experience.
Certainly, they're amazing. They also set a very high bar. There's just probably no room to be subpar. So for that reason, I've kept at it. But I'm very close friends with both Priscilla, now Luca. And I've been friends with them for a long time. So they've also been a massive help, which obviously I look up to them, try and meet them at their level and just learning all the time. But Priscilla, I've worked a few meetings with her of late. She's been excellent. You'll just watch how she turns up on camera. She's very upbeat. She definitely brings the people around her on the emotional roller coaster with her. She's very good to watch, and I can only hope to be as good as her one day. But for the meantime, I'll just keep driving her insane and picking her brain.
Well, I mean, you've hit a lot of winners with your best bets, and you do play the quaddie every on every occasion, or actually pretty much on every broadcast. So, all right, I want to know. You got to tell us right now on this show what your secret is to the quaddie, because you've hit some big ones before, and I'm the same as you. I play a lot of big tickets as well. Instead of, it hurts when you have like an anchor in a leg, which is the only horse in that race for you to win. So do you have any secrets for us that you could tell us, or do we have to watch on Sky?
Oh, honestly, I'm still figuring it out myself. I much rather throw an extra horse in the leg and have the quaddie as a percentage than leave that horse out that I had on the borderline and have it get up at a price. I was kicking myself at a Corindi, a Gunnedah meeting a few weeks back. I had a horse that was my fifth pick, and I had it in my quaddie, and I scrubbed it back out when and I think it paid something like $25, or it was like $50, the horse that got up and won, and the quaddie paid enormous, and I had the other three legs. So I just think if you're on the fence, keep the horse in that may or may not run a nice race, because generally they bob up at a price, and just take it for a percentage.
Were you okay? All right, I'm gonna ask you this though. So, what feels worse, losing as a jockey or losing as a punter?
It's a harder watch as a punter, because you don't realize how controlling you are till you've tipped or backed something and you're watching a jockey not make the same moves that you are. You become a very backseat driver. But it's probably as much as muchness, but I like to have the reins in my hands and take control, and that's definitely something you have to let go of, being both the tips.
And with your expertise, like how, when you're looking at horses at the mounting yard or in the paddock, if you will, for here, what do you see? Because that's one of the hardest things to do is, horses don't know the odds. They don't know $20, $100, or even $1.90. So what do you look for us, like when we're looking at them in the mounting yard? What are your tips?
Certainly, I feel like that's probably where I specialise. I remember even as a jockey, I had a knack for if I was walking around behind the gates on my mount, who may have been a long shot, but I would look at another jockey's mount and be like, oh, that horse looks so good, and it would come out and win. And it wouldn't matter the price. So I feel like I've really taken that to race day. I'm a very visual person. When I'm in a mountain yard, I want to see a horse that's well muscled. That quiet, confident demeanor about them. They've got a bit of a spring in their step, but they're not going over the top. And when they're on their A game, when they're glowing in the coat, regardless of the price, generally they run above average, an above average performance for where their form line sits.
And are you going to be on TV anytime soon for us at Sky? Because we get to see a lot of the presenters at Sky on our channel, which is Sky Racing World. The podcast will be out sometime this week. Do you get to know your schedule ahead of time?
Yeah, I know my schedule ahead of time. I think I'm working Sunday. It'll be your Saturday. This upcoming Sunday. So I'm working there next, and the weekend after on the following Friday, which is your Thursday, I'll be at Tamworth. So a couple of quieter weeks. I think February is pretty quiet for me, but I had an absolute very, very, very busy January. So it'll give me time to have a good look at the form and be all over it.
And what was the biggest one you've tipped so far? What was the biggest win that you've had as a tipster?
Off the top of my head, I've tipped a couple of $10 winners. That's probably as good as I've got. I've had quite a number of them that I've been stewing on myself that have gotten up at $20 that I've had them into the second place. So I'm just aiming for the next one up. That's my next step to probably you see horses and you think, oh, they should run a good race, and it's easy to tend back to the horse that the money's come for, but there's probably no real prize in that. I probably need to get behind myself a bit and back myself and put these ones at a bit of a price on top more often.
Yeah, we've I don't know if you know Anthony Collins, who was a I think he was at New South Wales. He was so proud of his $40 shot that he won, that he tipped. And it's the thing is that you just can't be afraid to give out your opinion no matter what the odds are. I would say that that's one of the big things, because the favorites aren't going to win all the time, and you know that. You're a jo you've been there, so you've got to experience on that side too.
Yes, certainly. I know a $151 winner for Tony Green at Port Macquarie one day, so that was the biggest price winner I rode. I'd love to find one and tip one at that price.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate Belinda. We're gonna get to see you again. The mom life and all that. So I really appreciate your time. Real quick before we go, you could follow Belinda on Instagram at Belinda underscore Hodder. And then you could also follow her on Twitter at Hodder Belinda. Thanks again. I
Definitely.
really appreciate your time. It was really fun
Thank
having
you.
you go through all the different things, your career, what you're doing now. It's really cool, and I appreciate all the everything that you do for us in the industry.
No, thank you, and thank you for having me on.